This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning, and joining me in the studio this morning is Philip C.
Very good morning.
Yeah, it's a lovely day. It's just gone past 6 a.m. It's Tuesday, the 5th of January, and unlike the last few days, it actually hasn't been raining.
Correct. Not as chilly as yesterday. Yesterday was Cameron Highland-esque weather.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of semi-excited because, you know, well, firstly, I didn't need to switch on the aircon. And secondly, it was like, wow, a nice 22, 23 degrees in the early morning, which is very unusual for
us. Sweater weather. Sweater weather in Klang Valley.
I know.
Would you ever say that?
It's like a novelty, isn't it?
Exactly.
But of course, the flip side to that is that it's rainy season. Mm. And with the rains, you know, there's a bit of flooding going on, especially in Perak, Pahang, Kelantan. So, you know, our thoughts go out to the people who are affected. And this is a yearly occurrence, but seems to have been made worse by climate change.
That's right. I think they're saying rains will continue till March. And nearly more than 20,000 people have been displaced already.
Yeah, you know, especially in this, you know, pandemic era, it's not helping. It's like bad news upon bad news. Mm. So, you know, let's hope the rains kind of clear up a little bit, although those in Klang Valley are enjoying the somewhat nice cool weather.
Breezy and cool weather.
Yeah, not so humid for a change.
Yeah.
But what do we have this morning, Philip?
Well, we're going to talk about the dreaded sentence, "Boss, I would like to take leave."
Why is it dreaded?
Because there's so much leftover leave
from
2020.
Okay.
And so the question really is, how are you going to manage all this leave from your staff and your employees? And how are you going to manage your own leave?
Tell them if they don't use it, you burn it. That's the evil boss coming
know,
out with
terrible.
These lines.
Yes.
In the meantime, we'll also be discussing how employees or younger ones deal with work today.
Very interesting phenomenon in China called the touching fish phenomenon. I've never heard about it
yeah,
until
I
yesterday.
Yeah, I also never heard about it. So, two very interesting topics to discuss. But first, as always, get in touch with us via WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in just a few minutes. But first, here's Mr. Blue Sky by Electric Light Orchestra. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Mr. Blue Sky by Electric Light Orchestra with a lovely, kind of unusual ending to the song.
It's like beginning another song at the end.
It's like almost, it wasn't like Light Orchestra, but more like the Queen. And that was your point, right, Philip?
Yeah.
Of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning, and I'm joined by Philip C today. It is just gone past 6:07 in the morning, Tuesday, 5th of January, and still a very nice, cool morning. But first off, I think we're going to discuss this very interesting article in the South China Morning Post about the young and how they approach work today. Philip, why didn't you tell us about this article? Because you picked it. And I, you know, is this a reflection of what you think young people are like?
Yes, I think so. This is a very interesting article. And for me, I was taken aback because it came from China.
Okay.
China, where there's this land of high productivity and incredible amount of work and the creation of this 996 formula, working 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 6 days a week, 72 hours.
Insane, I would have said.
It's insane. But there is this phenomenon where there are these Gen Z young employees in China that are rebelling against this work ethic. And they call this touching fish. Now, touching fish is a term borrowed from a Chinese proverb that states, "Muddy waters make it easy to catch fish," which means one should take advantage of a crisis to chase personal gain.
Okay.
So it's shocking, right? They're trying to set their own rules in the workplace by encouraging a growing philosophy of being lazy.
Okay, so just like finding excuses to slack off at the end
exactly.
of the day.
Like going to the toilet and sleeping, or if you have a book before, below, or if you're like watching Netflix during
office hours. Taking advantage of the free internet.
Exactly.
Well, I don't necessarily approve of any of this, okay?
Are you shocked?
Not really. I don't think it's probably something that is expected only in China. I think everyone might be guilty of it at times in their life.
Yes.
But I think the point about this is that if you're an employer, you have to kind of ask yourself, why are your employees doing this? Because you do want to have a workforce that is A, you know, productive, B, motivated. And clearly these people are not productive. or motivated? And what is the reason for that?
Well, it's a matter of expectations. Because if you read the article, they talk about the employee saying, I'm going to do mediocre work. It's okay. Not to say I'm going on strike or I'm not going to do any work. I'll do just enough to make it through.
Okay, so they kind of gauge what is the value of their work, is it? And
that's
they're only going to do that much.
Correct.
They not 10% more or 10% less, just there.
Yeah, my salary is 1 ringgit and I'll do 1 ringgit worth of work. So they assign a lot of monetary value to the work.
Okay.
And they think, okay, this is my value. I can only deliver this much because I'm being paid this much. So I'll just end it at that level.
At just at that point.
Just at that point. Ngam, ngam.
Ngam, ngam. Ngam. On the dot. But I wonder if that's your attitude at work, how far do you think you're going to go in life?
I'm actually surprised because when I think about it, I think, well, performance management for these companies must be terrible.
Yeah, it's challenging, right? I mean,
and I cannot imagine a boss saying, well, that's really going the extra mile and showing you can demonstrate leadership and growth and potential. But clearly, this generation doesn't view it that way. They don't view career as a progression, but perhaps about moving between jobs.
Okay.
And so perhaps that's why they don't feel the pressure to rise up and just get enough done, chalk enough points into the CV and move on to the next.
Yeah, could
company.
Be. Or maybe if you ask me, they're just incredibly unmotivated. They just don't like what they're doing and they feel trapped, right? So they think, okay, I just do this lah because I got no other choice. It's a global pandemic, it's a recession. I just need to make do. So I just go through the motions. You know, I just do what I need to do and then nothing more, nothing less. But I think, you know, if there isn't any like motivation or any joy in what you do, how long can you take it?
I think this is the challenge when you don't have choice. And when you have financial
commitments,
you feel trapped, you feel financial commitments and you're told repeatedly to be grateful that you've got a job. I think that just irks you more.
Okay.
And just irritates you a lot more.
So you find ways to circumvent the system, right?
That's right. Go to the toilet. Now your house, because of the pandemic, is one whole massive office toilet because you can just hide there the whole time.
Yeah, work from home allows you to do that, right?
Exactly.
It's harder and harder for people to kind of know what you're up to. But I don't know, if you're an individual that feels like this, I wonder how long and, you know, and to what end it's going to be detrimental to you in the longer term when you think about it. Right. Because do you just want to go through life, just go, you know, kind of cruising, or do you want to make something more of it?
I couldn't agree more. And I suspect this is the core of the generation. And have you heard of this term, strawberry and raspberry?
No.
Where actually it's this generation where you're easily bruised.
Oh, okay.
Where hardship and feedback that's constructive hurts you a lot and you can't take that pain. And so then you just rebel towards that pain and that's challenging. And because of that, they just go inwards,
insular,
and don't want to progress.
I think for me, what's important is you need to find the job that motivates you, that encourages you, an environment that allows you to grow. And if you feel like this at work, right, where you're hiding from your bosses in the washroom, something is clearly wrong. And maybe, yes, we're facing a recession and a job is important, but you need to think beyond that because it will suffocate you after a while. But let us know what you think about this. You know, do you feel frustrated at work? Do you hide in the washroom? WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. And of course, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have some messages. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Addicted to Love by Florence and the Machine, one of the most cool women dresses there are out there.
And one of the best covers for that song.
Yeah, the original, I think, Robert Palmer, if I'm right. But anyway, it's just gone past 6:18 in the morning. It's Tuesday, the 5th of January. And staying on the topic of work, because it's only the second day of the year, of the working year.
Everyone's thinking about work now, right? You have so much to get done.
I don't know whether we'll get much done. But we have some legacy issues from 2020 that we have to deal with. And this interesting article in The Economist brings it up. And it's about leave. And it's entitled, How to Deal with Leftover Leave Because Unused Holidays Are a Problem for Employers and Employees Alike. Yes, I think 2020, hardly any of us got to go on any vacation, except maybe a little bit of a chuti-chuti Malaysia, but nothing like what we used to do. You know, we used to take all these AirAsia flights, Malaysian airline flights, go around, you know, ASEAN like there was no tomorrow. And we didn't. We all were stuck at home.
And let's be honest, even if you took leave, you actually never really took leave because many people were actually working during leave. They just took leave for the excuse that I could respond later to the emails.
Guilty as charged. Or like in our case, on the morning run, you didn't have to get up at 4 in the morning.
Exactly. But it's prevalent. I've seen many people who basically I met and said, are you on leave? Yes. So why are you in this meeting? Oh, because there's nothing else to do anyway.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a little bit of guilty of that because in the last week of the year, I didn't work and then I turned up for some meetings and they were like, what are you doing here?
And go home, boss. Go home.
Well, I didn't turn up physically, but I turned up on a conference call and then they were like, is she monitoring us or what? But no, you're right, because you just feel like I'm here anyway, right? And I got stuff to do, so why not? And that's bad actually, because there was no time to kind of really unwind.
Yeah, we laugh about it and we think it's a personal problem. It is going to be an organizational challenge because the more vital the worker, the more likely they will have been asked to postpone their annual leave.
Yes.
So I suspect the high-performing individuals are the ones taking the least leave. And I think it's going to be very challenging later when all that leave is perhaps carried over or not. And they're asking for that leave when the markets open or when travel begins.
Oh, you mean when we are eventually given the vaccine and we can travel again,
exactly.
Right? Or when things kind of settle down,
yeah,
for example.
And you're a high performer, you want to ask for leave, but you can't because now is the time when business is booming and you've got to get to work.
You're like back on the treadmill before you even got a chance to get off, right?
And that's really the tension here. And I think this leave, we make fun about it. We think it's about you as an individual managing it. But I do think it has to be coordinated and planned a lot much better, especially in the first half of this year as markets reopen.
Yeah, I think it will be a challenge. I mean, even if we take this conversation back to my own time at BFM, for example, right? We've been instructed to, let's say, clear all the carry forward leave by Chinese New Year.
Yeah.
Now, how, you know, and there's a team of like 7 or 8 of us, how do we organize this so that, you know, there are people still coming to work? Not the whole team has disappeared, but yet I want to accommodate people, you know, as someone that approves leaves. I don't want to say, oh, you guys all cannot take, you know.
Correct.
How do I adjust this so that there's productivity in the office, there's enough people, but yet people get to have some time off?
The natural answer is planning. Which is, if everyone can plan in a horizon of 1 month, 2 months ahead and just re-coordinate and make sure that the leave is all well spread out, I think that's doable. The challenge I feel particularly with Malaysians is they don't plan ahead.
Or they procrastinate, right?
They
and then everybody takes in the last 2 years of the last 2 weeks of the year.
Yeah. Or they basically decide, oh, tomorrow I need to take leave. Or I found a really cheap ticket or the hotel price just dropped next week and I'd like to take for leave. And that's where the tension happens.
Yeah, but you know, and when I think about it, there are also individuals. I mean, you have to be considerate. You know your teammates, right? And I mean, let's face it, Malaysia is full of festivals. So if you're Chinese, okay, take the Chinese New Year leave. And then
that's
you
right.
Don't take leave during Hari Raya. Let your Muslim colleagues go on their vacation. And it's the same thing for Deepavali, right? Or those who are Christians and celebrate Christmas. So I think you can do your little part.
Yeah.
And you can sit down and discuss it like adults. Because I've worked in offices where, oh my goodness, the
leave.
They
take it very personally.
Yeah, the leave discussion is like mini war, you know. I want to take. How come you're taking? Oh, and then you get like, as a boss, right? How do you manage all this? And do you need to go down that path? So maybe it's true. What you need to do is actually have that discussion earlier in the year.
That's right. Like now.
Like now. Yeah. Okay. Plan for the next 3 months. And I'm sorry, even if you can't travel, you do need to clear some of the leave. You can't just carry it forward indefinitely either.
So it's an important question whether companies are now changing their leave policy in view of the pandemic. Because as we enter 2021, do you carry forward 3 months or 6 months? Because the 6 months, at least you cover Gawai and you cover Raya. Do you cover a more larger percentage to incentivize employees that you can? Or do you say no because business is going to be booming and we can't afford it? So it's really important questions that each organization has to grapple with.
But there's no right answer, is
there? There's no right answer. I think it's unique to each company. And it'll be even tougher if you're an MNC. How do you coordinate and apply that same logic
globally,
across the organization globally, with different levels of lockdown as well?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like, if you're in England, it's a complete lockdown. Your Malaysia is much more relaxed, right?
That's right.
So, yeah, I think all these are real challenges brought on by the pandemic. But the point about leave is, and this is, I think, where we have to remind ourselves. When you're on leave, be on leave. Don't be like me and work during leave.
And then your phone is vibrating. You're looking at it. It's like, oh, it must be a really important call. I have to pick it up. I must pick it up.
Yeah.
It is urgent and critical.
Nothing is urgent. The company will not burn down. Things will continue. And if it's truly urgent, trust me, they'll call you 5 times. And then you know you have to pick up the phone. Problem.
Yeah, call me on my landline if it's urgent.
Yeah, then you know it's really, really bad. So, you know, I think this is something all companies will be facing. And even yourself, you know, clear that leave. Take that break because 2020 was a tough year. 2021 might not be much easier, but let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin, and to take us there is More Than a Feeling by Boston. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning. This is Shaoning, and I'm here with Philip on The Morning Run, and that was Guilty by Lady Ray. It has just gone past 6:39 in the morning. It's a lovely Tuesday, the 5th of January. And we've had some interesting conversations so far in the last half an hour, especially all work-related. But now we're taking a look at what's happening around the world. And unfortunately for the UK, everyone in England must stay at home, except for permitted reasons, during a new coronavirus lockdown beginning midnight last night. So UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced this. All schools and colleges were closed to most pupils and switched to remote learning until the middle of February. Early year settings such as nurseries, however, will stay open. Now, in a televised address, the PM urged people to follow the rules immediately amid surging cases and patient numbers.
Yes, and in Scotland, earlier issued a stay-at-home order and joined Wales in closing classrooms for most pupils. Also, that this last state, Northern Ireland's Stormont executive are also meeting to discuss possible new measures as well.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the reasons why, it's very simple, right? Because the UK recorded more than 50,000 new confirmed COVID cases for the 7th day in a row. A further 58,000 cases and an additional 407 deaths within 28 days of a positive test result was reported, although there were no deaths in Scotland. And like in the first lockdown in March, people cannot leave their homes except for certain reasons. So it includes essential medical needs, food shopping, exercise and work for those who cannot do so from home. I think the other reason, of course, is that it's placing an incredible strain on the National Health Service.
Yes.
So there's a sharp shortage of beds, and I think also just medical workers, you know, trying to reach out to all those who aren't well.
I think the data was saying that in certain hospitals, already 6 out of 10 beds are already occupied and taken. So you can feel the strain happening in the UK. The good thing about the UK is there seems to be unanimous support over these lockdown measures. Even the opposition leader, Keir Starmer, has indicated that they would support the government. And all the 4 states in the United Kingdom have also collectively agreed that this is the right way forward. So I think this is at least some alignment between the politics to make sure that it's enforced and done properly.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it really boils down to a no-choice thing, right? When your COVID cases are so high and your national health system is really at breaking point, then I think everyone should be, you know, they have a single objective, and that's to flatten the pandemic curve. And we have learned, unfortunately, lockdowns do work. There's an incredible economic cost. I'm not saying there isn't one. There is. You know, you do pay for it in terms of a recession or slowdown. There's inevitable, but you know, the point is, if you don't bring down the health, you don't flatten the curve, your economy in the longer term will also suffer.
Yeah, so this lockdown comes in tandem with that rapid vaccination program happening in the UK, and UK is really leading the way in its vaccination. I think 1 out of 100 people already have been vaccinated. They've already got the AstraZeneca vaccine also going through the rounds
as well.
Yeah,
they've approved all 3, right?
Exactly.
They're the first country to do so.
And I think they're top 3 in terms of vaccination per capita. And it really goes to show, just because you're getting a vaccination program in place, it doesn't mean you should relax or hunker down. And you need to still put in place these very tough measures, where some will say it's draconian.
No, and if you ask me, these are lessons that even Malaysia can learn, because unfortunately, our case numbers are still very high. The total as of January 4th is 120,000 people who have contracted COVID-19. Yesterday, we have 1,741. And yes, there is vaccine optimism, but nonetheless, we still need to practice those SOPs. We need to keep the physical distancing, you know, try and minimize contact with people. And, you know, even in Penang over New Year's Eve, they had to like clamp down on cafes because they were just crowded. People were not practicing any SOPs. They were not doing contact tracing. So we don't want to go down UK's path. We don't want to have another lockdown. The cost is too high.
That's right.
Economically also. So I think that's something that we have to do. But another story, interesting one, is of course, and somewhat unrelated, but nonetheless interesting, is the Ant Group co-founder Jack Ma, because he recently skipped a recent taping of an African TV program he created, spurring speculation online about his whereabouts and the outcome of an investigation into his internet empire. You know, very spooky, because he's a very visible man and suddenly you haven't seen him for like 2 months.
Individual. A real role model in China. And I think it all basically came to roost end of October when he gave that infamous speech in Shanghai, basically chastising the traditional financial institutions and banks for really not being adaptive and innovative. And I think that got him into a lot of hot water.
Yeah, but what happened? Has he really disappeared, or has he just decided to like lie low for the moment because he's not really, you know, the most popular man with the Chinese government at the moment?
Well, I'm sure he's under a lot of scrutiny. Because firstly, his IPO with Ant basically floundered. Secondly, now the Chinese government is investigating him over perhaps perceived antitrust. So I think he's perhaps taking a really low-key approach this time. And they might launch a series of Sherlock, Chinese Sherlock investigators on him.
Okay. So you go one day from being one of the richest billionaires, I mean, in China, to kind of just disappearing. Tells you a lot about what you know, how interesting China really, really is and how little control you might actually have. And the state is seriously the one in power.
Such a fall from grace. Hopefully the phoenix rises.
Well, you never know. But meanwhile, a phoenix that we hope, you know, might not rise or might not rise so soon until 2024 is Donald Trump.
Unless, are we really calling him a phoenix?
I don't know. You never know, right? Because in US, astonishing new evidence has come to light of President Trump caught on tape trying to bully a top Georgia GOP official into finding votes. And here's a very quick clip of it.
I don't know. Look, Brad, I have to find 12,000 votes, and I have them times a lot, and therefore I won the state. That's before we go to the next step, which is in the process of right now, you know. And I watched you this morning, and you said, well, there was no criminality, but I mean, all of this stuff is very dangerous stuff. It's, when you talk about no criminality, I think it's very dangerous for you to say that. I just don't know why you don't want to have the votes counted as they are.
And yes, that was Mr. President
breathtaking
Donald Trump, right? Going on his little rant and rave. He's asking someone to find these votes. Is that what you do in the supposed the most democratic country in the world?
I mean, that's a classic sore loser. A real classic sore loser. Really sad. S, because he's selfish. A, an amateur because he thinks that he can get away with that and doesn't think it will be published. And D, such a disrespect for the institution of politics and democracy.
Well, that was Donald Trump. But let us know what you think in WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Wong Xiaoning with Philip C, and this is The Morning Run. And that was Raspberry Beret by the late Prince. And it's just gone past 6:51 in the morning. It's the 5th of January, and it's a lovely Tuesday morning. And of course, we're taking a look at some local / Singapore news stories this morning. And I'm staring at the Singapore Straits Times portal. And the title is Parliament, Singapore could not accept Malaysia's proposal to remove asset company from HSR project. And this is according to their minister, Transport Minister Ong Ye Kung, who made this statement at Parliament. And he said the significant change was to remove this asset company, and that was Singapore's main concern. And the purpose of this asset company was because both countries at that time, when they signed the bilateral agreement, came to the conclusion that it was the interests, so that both countries' interests were protected. And this was supposedly to minimize the possibility of future agreements and disputes over the long duration of this project that would last decades. And this joint company was also in a way to ensure that there was proper governance in terms of how the project was rolled out.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point. And that's where you see the distinction between the Malaysian and Singapore side. I think the Malaysian side wanted to separate the entities into a Malaysian and Singapore side, and each kind of managed it relatively different. I think the argument on the Malaysian side was that they would be able to generate more cost savings if they had changed the project structure, whereas I think, as you rightly pointed out just now, Xiaoning, the goal of the Asset Co was proper governance, having expertise that was independent to facilitate the overall project. So really the tension here really was perhaps the governance and the process of how we administer and execute this versus the perhaps cost savings that the Malaysian side had.
Well, they had said that they wanted, right? Because for them, I think for Singapore's perspective, it should be a single train system operating between the two countries. And like I said earlier, because neither country felt or Singapore felt that they didn't have the expertise or experience, then this company was supposed to help them appoint the best-in-class industry players through what they say an open and transparent international tender to assume the role of the Asset Co. Well, everybody, I guess we'll be following this story. I mean, whether it will happen and end in Johor Bahru, which I think a lot of our commentators have said, what is the point then, right?
I know. I think the interesting part of this article also was the numbers, because till then, we really had no clarity about how much has been spent so far. So the Singapore side has come out to say they've spent Singapore $270 million already on the project, lower than their budgeted $300 million. Our minister, Tok Pa, has actually come back to say the compensation will be much less than that. So it'll be very interesting to see what will Malaysia's compensation to Singapore be, since the bar has already been set. The line has been drawn on the sand by Singapore that the number is $270 million. How much of that will Malaysia compensate is yet to be determined, I think.
Yeah, and Singapore being Singapore, they've also, you know, continued with their plans, because actually for them, the high-speed rail was also a means to actually redevelop what they call the Jurong Lake District, okay? Because the terminal was supposed to end there. But they're still going ahead with that project. So I think the overall impetus and vision for that continues. But nonetheless, we'll be following this story very closely. But somewhat related to transportation is, of course, Prasarana.
I know, it's everywhere in the newspaper, front, back, centre. Of course, in The Star, if you go to page 2, in Prasarana, it is not a raid by MACC. So I think there was a word...
What did they say? Visit.
Visit. So there was a wordplay between a raid versus a visit. I would counter that both are very different.
Did you serve them coffee?
Yes, exactly.
Did they just sit in the
Was it gentle questioning? Or was it really like, I want all your data and
give me your documents now.
Give me your documents and all that. So I really think this is very interesting. In tandem, there was that press conference by the chairman and with the payments due to George Ken MRCB. I think there were so many things happening yesterday on Prasarana. It is engulfing, I think, one quarter of the newspaper pages.
Yeah, because it also affects listed co's, in particularly George Kent and MRCB, who are the PDPs for the LRT 3, which is related to this Prasarana, or the bulk of the conversation with regards to Prasarana. But I think there's also this very small news related to transport and road. Unfortunately, potholes still exist.
From high-speed rail to LRT3 and finally to potholes, I think this flooding has basically exacerbated potholes. You know, it's very interesting. I was just looking at it. I mean, this has been an ongoing conversation with Kyrie and all that. And actually, there was a campaign called Aku Janji Zero Potholes.
Okay.
And there are actually 11 ways for you to lodge a complaint when you see a
pothole. We don't need 11. We just need one good way.
But Carrier Pigeon wasn't part of the 11. but you can write a letter if you want, if you find a pothole. And apparently, they will resolve it in 24 hours.
Oh, wow. Let's see whether they keep to that promise. But that's all from the local papers this morning. Coming up next is a 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be speaking to Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist, to find out where global markets are heading. Stay tuned for that. But first, here's Spoonful by Howling Wolf, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.